You'll see the reason why I chose this. Psalm 15, you notice in the second paragraph there, the dark print, that the believer here who keeps his oath even when it, what?
Hurts.
When it hurts. And you'll see why. Elder Yule had to be out of town this Sabbath, but I didn't know about it till Wednesday. So I've not had time to pick up the series again that we were on. So I'm going to speak on something else. I hope you don't mind it. My first wife never wanted me to preach about it, but I thought I'd like to preach about it. If you'll take, I don't know what my second wife will say, Judges 11, 30 to 31 and 34, 35. You may not like this story, but it has, I think, a deep truth for us and for us here at Chatsworth, too. Judges 11, 30 to 31. Now, you remember a little bit about the book of Judges. I don't know that we had a quarterly on it, didn't we, some time back? Yeah. It was a period of time just after the Exodus, and it was said, you know, every man did what was right in his own eyes. It was a loose society at that point. All right, let's look at verse 30, 31. And Jephthah vowed a vow unto the Lord, and said, if thou shalt without fail deliver the children of Ammon into mine hands, Jephthah was a general, and the Ammonites were the enemy, if thou shalt without fail deliver the children of Ammon into mine hands, then it shall be that whatsoever cometh forth of the doors of my house to meet me, when I return in peace from the children of Ammon, shall surely be the Lord's. I will offer it up for a burnt offering. And then if you look down to verse 34 and 35. And Jephthah came to Mizpah, the battle was over, unto his house, and behold, his daughter came out to meet him with timbrels and with dances. And she was his only child. Beside her he had neither son nor daughter. And it came to pass when he saw her that he rent his clothes and said to her, alas, my daughter, thou hast brought me very low, and thou art one of them that trouble me. For I have opened my mouth unto the Lord, and I cannot go back. I cannot go back. Clovis Chapel was a very famous Methodist minister here in the Carolinas, in the North Carolina, in the South here. He makes this comment about the this account of Jephthah. He said, these are big words. There's a ring of sterling strength in them. They have a robust masculinity that grips my heart. They're not the words of a weakling. They have absolutely no savor of softness or moral flabbiness. They're not cheap. They are high-priced words. They are words made costly by a plentiful baptism of tragedy. They are words literally soaked in blood and tears. I have opened my mouth to the Lord, and I cannot go back. And he had vowed that he would sacrifice whatever came out of the door of his house. And it was his daughter that came out of the door of the house. Don't judge him too hard yet. You see, Jephthah had made a vow. What's a vow? It's a promise. If the Lord would give him success in the battle against the enemy, the Ammonites had ruled. You're dealing now with I should maybe make it clear. You're dealing now with the part of Israel that lived east of the Jordan. Most of the Bible stories take place west of the Jordan, but this is east of the Jordan. You remember there were two tribes. I mean, Manasseh was so big, They put half of Manasseh on one side of the river and half on the other. And there was Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben that lived on the east side of the Jordan. We call it Transjordan. And this is about central Jordan, out to the desert, from the river on out to the desert, the Arabian desert. And the Ammonites, which were relatives, you remember, through Lot, had become pagan, of course, Ammonites and Moabites. And they had actually subjected that part of the country for 18 years. And they came to this great battle. Israel had repented of its sins, and they were trying to do what's right. And they had turned back to the Lord at the point when the Ammonites came down, came over in great numbers for a battle. And Jephthah was involved with it, and he made this vow. And payday had arrived. He had to make good. To fulfill this vow will blot out the sunshine of his life. She's the only child he has. She's not a baby. She's not a little girl. She's a young woman of marriageable age. He will pluck the only flower of his garden. He will turn the music of his life to discord. But Jephthah's like David's man, and he felt that he had made an oath, and he couldn't change. Now, one of the things about the Bible that you'll notice very quickly when you read the Bible records the faults as well as the good aspects of the characters that it deals with. That's one of the points of its inspiration. It doesn't spare. There's no question that this is a rash vow, and that Jephthah should have broken it. Don't misunderstand me when I'm finished with this. There's no question he could have broken it. God never commanded the offering of human sacrifice. Never. But you've got to judge him, and you've got to look at him according to the light of his day and the personal backgrounds we'll see in a minute. You know, Jephthah did make the honor roll. You can read about Hebrews 11, 32-33. If you just hold your place there in Judges and turn to Hebrews 11, 32-33, you'll see that he is mentioned there. What shall I say, verse 32, and what shall I say more, for the time would fail me, Paul says, to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson and of Jephthah, of David and also Samuel and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. He made the honor roll. So you have to look at him from his own times. But there's something noble, there's something big about Jephthah, who could make a vow of such price and feel he could not go back on his word. Well, let's look at the man's life just quickly. His early life. Look at chapter 11, verse 1. Now Jephthah the Gileadite, Gilead was an early ancestor of Manasseh. And this territory where they lived is named after the father, Gilead. I mean, one of the ancestors, previous ancestors. And he was considered a Gileadite. Now, Jephthah the Gileadite was a mighty man of valor. But you could put the word but there instead of an and. But he was the son of a what? Of an harlot. So start right away. Here is a boy. Jephthah was an illegitimate child. He was an illegitimate child. And Gilead, that was the man here, another a descendant of the first Gilead, begat Jephthah. In other words, Jephthah was a child of shame. He was wrong from birth. An unfaithful father, A mother had sold her purity. He was a fragment of a home that never was. Never was. The first lips that kissed him were soiled lips. That's the boy. That's what he was born in. Our society, even our promiscuous society of today, still frowns on this type of thing. But where does the frown really lie? It always hits what? The child. The child is blamed. He's the illegitimate. He's the bastard, or she. And that's what he had. He had the stigma that's often felt. He had the stigma of it, even though he was an innocent child, the stigma that really should rest on his parents, it rested on him. Now you see in verse 2, Gilead did one thing. He took him into his home. But that wasn't acceptable either. And Gilead's wife bare him sons. And his wife's sons grew up. They didn't like Jephthah. He was what? Illegitimate. He didn't belong there. He was there just because the father felt it was his duty to take care of him. He had brought him into the world. But he wasn't wanted. And when he got large enough, and when the sons grew up, and they knew that he would be what? He would inherit along with them. They said, you get out. We don't want you. And so you see the picture there of verse 2, that the son said to him, thou shalt not inherit in our father's house, for thou art the son of a strange woman. You're illegitimate. You don't belong here. And there must have been some sort of a fight, because the Hebrew says that he fled. He had to get out, and he had to get out fast. He fled from his brethren. He didn't just walk out. He was kicked out. And the elders apparently of the town approved it. And so he was driven out. He didn't know where to go. It says he fled from his brethren and dwelt in the land of Tob, or Tov, which was east, the eastern side of the tribe of Manasseh across Jordan. And as David was the same way, there gathered vain men to Jephthah and went out with him. Now, these vain men weren't necessarily bad men. Some of your translations will give you other words. Worthless. Not necessarily bad, but they had nothing. They're like they're homeless people here. They have nothing. But not necessarily bad people. And he kind of formed them into a little bit of an army, like a band of warriors, like David did, and apparently raided on the Ammonites and other peoples. That's the way he lived. But the strange thing, in this type of life, he became a very wise and very valiant warrior. Now, you come to verses 4 to 11. It came to pass in the process of time that the children of Ammon made war against Israel. And there wasn't anyone among the Israelites of Manasseh that they could look to as a leader to fight. They didn't know how to fight. And so verse 5 says what they did. It came to pass that when the children of Ammon made war against Israel, the elders of Gilead went to fetch Jephthah out of the land of Tov. And they said unto Jephthah, come and be our captain, that we may fight with the children of Ammon. Turn the table, so to speak. And Jephthah said unto the elders of Gilead, did you not hate me and expel me out of my father's house? So you see, the elders of the town had really agreed with the brothers and had part in getting him out. Why are ye come unto me now when ye are in distress? And the elders of Gilead said unto Jephthah, therefore we turn again to thee now. They wouldn't answer him, see, that thou mayest go with us and fight against the children of Ammon and be our head over all the inhabitants of Gilead. He said, you'd make me your head? You kicked me out and you want me to be the captain of your host? Make me the general? Make me the judge of your territory? If we win? How do I know you won't kick me out again? So that's the picture of it. But, you know, it is interesting. He could have become very hard and bitter. You know, that's how I think that's how some of us would have reacted. You kicked me out when I was just a young man. You would have nothing to do with me. Now you come begging for my help. Go take care of yourselves. That's how a normal person would react. But somehow this waif of a home that never was, somehow I learned something about God, learned something about the Lord. He knew something about the history of Israel, and he hadn't become bitter. He went back with them, and he agreed to be their captain. He agreed to be their general. It took a big heart to forgive, I think, the elders and his family to swallow his pride. So we come down to verses 12 to 33. 11 says that Jephthah went with the elders of Gilead, and the people made him head and captain over them, and Jephthah uttered all his words before the Lord in Mizpah. This seems to be Ramoth Gilead on the east side. Evidently, they made the promises there before the Lord, and he laid out the plan of action, how they would meet the Ammonites. Well, it is interesting. I don't want to take the time to read it, but if you read verses 12 to 33, he argues with the king of Ammon. He says, why are you coming out to fight? And the king sends a message back. He said, because when Israel came out of Egypt, and you came up, you know, around Edom and Moab, you took our territory. And that's all I want. The territory between the Arnon River and the Jabbok River. It's about the center of Palestine on the east side. It says, you took all that land. And it is interesting that Jephthah, in spite of his background, knew all about the history. And he tells him, says, that's not so. He said, let me tell you the real truth. When we came out of Egypt and we passed through Moab, and I mean Edom and Moab, and we came up to the Arnon River, the Ammonites, you folks weren't even there. You were east of this territory. There was Sihon, the king of the Amorites, was there, a Canaanite. And we didn't even bother Sihon. We said, would you let us pass through your territory? And Sihon said, nothing doing. And he came out with his armies, and we had a battle. And of course, that's the first major battle that Moses led. And they conquered the Amorites there and took that whole territory, Sihon's territory, not the Ammonites. The Ammonites were claiming this. And he said, that's why we own it. That's why we live there. Furthermore, and it's interesting what he had to say here, verse 26. While Israel dwelt in Heshbon and her towns and in Aroer, this is all part of this territory the Ammonites wanted, and her towns and all the cities that be along the coast of Arnon, 300 years. They've lived there. He knew his chronology. We have lived there 300 years. Why, therefore, did you not recover them within that time? If it really was yours, why didn't you come within the 300 years that we've been living there? We conquered it from Sihon, the Amorite, and you haven't bothered with it for 300 years. Now why are you here? Well, of course, they wouldn't retreat, and the battle took place. And verse 29 says, as the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah, and he passed over Gilead, this is a piece of territory of Manasseh, passed over unto the children of Ammon. And it's at this point, just as they go into battle, Jephthah vowed a vow unto the Lord and said, if thou shalt without fail deliver the children of Ammon into mine hands, and it shall be, then it shall be that whatsoever cometh forth of the doors of my house to meet me, when I return in peace from the children of Ammon, surely shall be the Lord's. I will offer it up for a burnt offering. It was a rash vow, no question about it. It was not inspired by the Holy Spirit. But, you know, there's something noble about it, though. You know what? And I say this to myself, too. Jane said the other day, you're a pessimist, and I am to some degree. The church suffers today really for the want of men and women who will risk something for God. You know, he did. He risked. He was willing to risk whatever came out of the door. If we look at this side of his vow, you see something different. He was willing to risk. He didn't know what would come out of that door. Could have been his wife. Maybe that wouldn't have been a risk. But anyway, it was a risk, though, of a person, not likely a cat, not likely a dog. He's not even thinking. But you think of the other people in the Bible, the widow. Was she foolish when she threw the two mites into the treasury? You know what Jesus said about her? What? The reason she was blessed, she cast in more than the others because she cast in what?
Everything.
All she had. Wasn't that a risk? What's she going to eat? What would she eat? You see, how about Mary? Why is Mary so afraid to not openly spill the ointment on the Christ? She's afraid Martha is going to say, "You're foolish. It took a full year. That ointment was it cost a full year's laboring man's daily wage for a full year to buy it. How she ever managed 300 denarii, nobody will ever know. Wasn't that foolish to give all of that? For what? For the master's life? No, she thought she was buying it for what? His death. To anoint his body in his death. It would do him no good. But she wanted to do it because she loved him for what he had done for her. Isn't that foolishness? Peter, Andrew, James, and John, Christ calls them when the nets are what? Full. Foolish, it looks. It seems almost rash. But the church lacks for that. People like Jephthah, like the widow, like Mary, like the disciples, willing to risk something big. But now you can see the picture, verse 34. Jephthah came to Mizpah, to his house. I can just see it in my mind's eye, the general with his entourage. You know how it is. The fellas is successful, and so the little guys collect around him. And of course, he probably had his little council of men, and they're all riding beside him, and they're all shouting, you know, they're so happy about the victory. They had been 18 years under the subjugation of the Ammonites. This was victory time. They're coming home. It's all over with. Israel's in the ascendancy. But Jephthah's not shouting. He's thoughtful. He remembers the vow. And then they come around the bend in the road. They can see the door of his home. And out of the door bursts this young woman with her friends and the timbrels, the hand drums. And they pour out of the house there dancing and laughing and shouting songs of victory as only the Hebrews can do it. And they're dancing around him. And the record says, and she, verse 34, was his only child. And she sees right away the terror on the face of her father. And being a woman, she intuitively knew that he had done something that involved her. And he said to her, "Alas, my daughters," he tore his clothes at the Hebrew method of showing grief. He tore his clothes and he said, "Alas, my daughter, thou hast brought me very low. For I have opened my mouth unto the Lord and I cannot go back." And she knew right away that he had made some kind of vow that involved her. And her answer is very noble. She said unto him, verse 36, "My father, if thou hast opened thy mouth unto the Lord, do to me according to that which hath proceeded out of thy mouth. for as much as the Lord hath taken vengeance for thee of thine enemies, even of the children of Ammon. Well, you might want to put down Jeremiah 19:5. God never commanded human sacrifice, and he could have broken this. But you think of it in the light of his times. This was very common among the pagans to offer their children as sacrifices. And you think of it in that light. But take a look at this. Consider the strength of this man's determination to do what he believed he had to do. That's what I want you to see here. Look at the strength of his determination to do what his conscience urged him that he should do, because he had made a promise. He's a little bit like Joseph. I cannot go back and do this sin. Or like Peter, we cannot go back and cease to speak of what we have seen and heard. He made this vow in the secrecy of his heart. I mean, just add another stroke to it. Nobody knew he had made the vow. He did it in his mind. He could have dismissed it. No one knew he even had made it. But he felt he could not violate his own conscience. Jephthah made his vow under pressure. Lots of people make vows under pressure. Flying in an airplane, something goes wrong in the motor. You know what airplanes do when something goes wrong in the motor? They usually go down. How often have people in those conditions made all kinds of vows to God? But unfortunate, sometimes they land all right and never think about the vow again. What about the promises we make today? What about promises we make when distress presses us? All kinds of distresses. People are sick and make all kinds of promises. Lord, if you just heal me, I'll do so and so. Lord, if you just keep me through this accident, I'll do so and so. Think of all the promises people make under stress. When we were baptized, we publicly, by that act, promised to obey God in everything. How about that vow? How about those vows of our baptism, our marital vows, all kinds of vows we have? Have we been faithful to those vows? At times, the pressures are strong on us to compromise, like Jephthah. Jephthah could have. But Jephthah is a model, I think, to many Christians. I have opened my mouth unto the Lord. I cannot go back. Cannot go back. I've got to carry out my promise. Ellen White puts it this way, Education 57. If you don't have the book, you ought to buy it. Education 57. You've heard the statement many times. The greatest want of the world is the want of what? Of men and women. Men who will not be bought or sold. Men who in their inmost souls are true and honest. Men who do not fear to call sin by its right name. Men whose conscience is as true to duty as the needle to the pole. Men who will stand for the right though the heavens fall. Think of the strength of this man's vow, his promise. He should never have kept it. It's a rash vow. But think of the nobleness of of the strength of his promise. Lord, I've opened my mouth. I cannot go back. I've made this vow to you. I cannot go back. Think of the vows that we break right and left, folks. Really. That have no reason to be broken. That have no reason like his to be broken. How easily we compromise our promises. How easily we compromise our baptismal vows or other types of vows. May God help us to gain some inspiration from this man. But there's more than that. Think of the Christ. We don't know anything about the plan of salvation as a God. Well, I say we know a few things. when the Godhead made the plan of salvation in eternity past. And it was determined if humankind would sin, that God the Son would take human nature and die on the cross in behalf of human beings, rather, to pay the penalty for sin. You think of the time when it came to that moment when Christ left heaven. The Bible doesn't talk about this. But when he left heaven, and in some mysterious way was conceived in the womb of Mary, think of the wrenching of that deity, in the Godhead. God so loved the world that he what? He gave. That he gave his only begotten Son. You can almost hear the Father say, as the Son disappears from heaven, I have opened my mouth. I've made a promise. I cannot go back. And you think of Gethsemane, of Christ himself in Gethsemane, where he wrestles with that thing again, and in his humanity begs God to take away the cup of suffering, take away Calvary, if it could be done. Nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done. He's really saying the same thing that Jephthah said. I have opened my mouth. In the councils of the Godhead, I determined that I would be the sacrifice for humankind. I cannot go back. There's the example, isn't it? Jephthah is a pale example to Jesus. May God give us grace to be loyal to our vows.
Amen.
Give us grace to be loyal to the Christ. Reflect that kind of dedication to the promises we've made to him. Loving Father, we thank thee that we could have this privilege of opening thy word together. We thank thee for thy great love as we think of Jesus and of Calvary, and of the plan and the cost. Help us, Lord, to be true to our vows as thou hast been to thine own. And may we be loyal to thee day by day as we face another week when the Sabbath is gone. Bless our witness. Help us to be the kind of people that thou canst work through to hasten on the day of Jesus' return. We ask in his blessed name. Amen.